Hey, Chris Manning here from Locked On Cavs. Coming up on today's show, a deep dive into Cavs Nuggets from Saturday for myself and Evan, and then looking ahead to the rest of the week of Cavs basketball. This is Locked On Cavs, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Evan, this was a fun weekend. The Cavs beat the Detroit, or sorry, excuse me, beat the Denver. Wow, I can't talk. 111-103 on Saturday. I gotta say, I was like poo-pooing their chances of winning this game. In the little like mini game thread I did up at Fear the Sword, they ended up winning this one, and you know, almost blew it late and whatnot. But played pretty well, and I just gotta say, like that's quite fun considering where we've been with this Cavs team this year. This frankly just caught me off guard more than anything else.
No, we both were just saying, you know, that was Detroit after everything Cleveland went through over that last 24-hour span with the whole slugs comment. We were both saying, like, yeah, well, enjoy it while you can because the Nuggets are probably going to mollywop the Cavs. But, you know, in the end, it looks like the Nuggets were the slug. But maybe they should be called the Sluggets. I just came up with that one on the fly. I'm really proud of myself right now. But you know, it was a good win. Everyone in general just kind of had a pretty solid all around game for the starting unit. And then it's just Denver. I've kind of gathered after just doing a little research into it after the fact, they play down to their opponents a lot if they're a bad team, and obviously Cleveland's a bad team. Record-wise, at least. They're good in my heart. But it was just kind of a case of that, and I think Cleveland outscored them in every quarter but the fourth, and they were up 23-18 in the first, and the Cavs just kind of didn't look back from that point. I mean, it got close for a bit, and you kind of expect that with a team as talented as Denver's. But no, it was just pretty happy overall, just kind of how the young guys looked and the old guys looked, and no, just not a lot of complaints when it came to how they executed against the Nuggets.
Do you have a favorite performance of the young guys from this one? Because I think there's a couple cases you could make of stuff that I was like really into. And obviously, like there is a limited number of young guys because no KPJ, obviously, no Dylan Windler. Mm-hmm. But any guys that really kind of stand out to you as like the guy you're kind of raving about coming out of that game?
Well, I really like Darius Garland in this game. He had 18 points, 8 assists, 2 steals, and then 2 turnovers to match those 8 assists. And then Mike Schmitz of ESPN tweeted this evening. We're recording this on Sunday, just for everyone who needs to know the timeline of this. He said over his last 5 games, Garland has averaged 17.2 points, 5.4 assists, 2.4 turnovers in 36.6 minutes while shooting 51.4% from mid-range and closer to the basket, and then 36.7% from three, and then he's 93.8% from the free throw line. Like, Darius Garland had a slow and rough start to his rookie campaign, and to play a legitimately good team like the Nuggets, I mean, granted, Denver didn't look their best that when Cleveland was in town, but, you know, it's just, you take those small victories, and since it's against such a high quality and high caliber opponent, yeah, it was a pretty good night overall. What about you? Well, who's your, out of the young guys, who was your favorite one besides, I mean, if I stole your Garland Thunder, my apologies.
No, but I think we need to talk about, I thought Sexton was quite good in this game. I thought Jetty did some stuff that was really quite good as well, to a lesser degree. But let's talk more about Garland. So here's his stat line, 38 minutes, ties Tristan for a team high, 8 of 16 from the field, only 2 of 9 from 3, doesn't shoot any free throws, but here's where it gets like particularly, I think, good. 8 assists, that's a team high.
Mm-hmm.
2 steals, only 2 turnovers, only 1 foul, 18 points. For me, when I look at Garland in this one, I look at some of the stuff he's doing, and there's a bunch of questions we'll answer, I think, in the mailbag about him, and you know, I think he remains kind of a work in progress because he is so young and whatever. The passing stuff for him, to me, it's just like undeniable that he can, like, if he's not like a good passer now, he's not like a kind of a good creator in any way now.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he is, that was a, again, I think part of his skill set that was undersold. And I think there's stuff that the Cavs have started to adapt that I think has quite become pretty interesting. Like, there's a clip going around. I'm going to get the guy's handle right because he, and kind of just give his bio because it's, I'm going to make sure I have this right. It is this guy on Twitter whose handle is Steve Jones. Steve Jones 20 on Twitter. Steve Jones, according to his bio, worked in the NBA, was a coach with the Nets, did the video stuff for the Grizz, etc. He's one of the guys that has successfully like moved over to doing some interesting stuff on Twitter, but he's not doxing people.
And he's not jumping in your DMs asking for that one.
Yeah.
That $1.
Yeah, sorry. Or like, sorry. Yeah, that one. Yeah, one. Yeah, yeah. If you know, if you know, you know.
If you know, you know.
But he had, if you know, you know. Shot Pusha T voice. If you know, you know. But I can't do that. I love Pusha T. Pusha T rules. But he, so he had a thread on this game, and one of the things that he architected was it was like the Cavs called a timeout. They bring up the ball. This is in the fourth quarter, and the Cavs ran this play. Was a wedge. It's a wedge roll. Basically, it's just like kind of. Kevin's coming to set a screen. Brandon Knight in this play setting a back screen on Jamal, or it's on looks like it's Will Barton, I think. And what the Cavs did, instead of just having like Tristan like diving sort of normally, he came from the elbow. He didn't just like hang onto the dunker spot. He moved from the elbow. So when he does that, and Jokic isn't like already down there, Jokic comes up to step onto Garland, and probably in the scouting report, I'm sure that says he's going to shoot the floater. Let's try to contest it. Garland mm-hmm. like seems to know that this was coming and like dumps it off to Thompson, and the Cavs get these 2 points, take a 12-point lead. Like Garland making that read is something. I like Sexton. I think there's stuff he does that's really good. That's probably not a play Collins making super easily. It's just not like in his DNA as a player. I don't think Darius was making that play. The way he makes this pass is like he comes around the screens, comes around gets into the lane, and he just like and isn't trying to force a shot. It isn't like a last minute thing. He knows Tristan is going to be there. I'll link this tweet in the show notes, but it's just a perfect little lob. And I'm like, Darius as a creator is something that I'm just super interested in continuing to develop. I'm pro. This is a pro Darius Garland can pass account.
No, I think we're both on the same page here. It's just I'm trying to think like there's small times just. Throughout the season where Garland has just kind of made like a really just nice play or nice pass or just the smart logical read that you just don't kind of expect from somebody who's 19 years old. And especially coming out of Vanderbilt, I think, yeah, he was the one who said he's more of a pass first point guard, and people kind of turned their nose at that because he's has so much gravity offensively. But I don't know. I've said this from the beginning. He's kind of always played with that quiet confidence where he knows he's the best player, at least in the backcourt for Cleveland. And there's times where he cedes the production in the floor to Sexton a little bit. And that's why Colin doesn't move the ball, but was Cleveland's leading scorer tonight. But no, Garland just kind of, the offense flows really well with him. And like you said, I'm excited to see how they keep developing it or it keeps growing, but it's refreshing for sure, to say the least, that the Cavs have an actual franchise guard who can move the ball a little bit, considering that Sexton was drafted for that role as well. And then Kyrie was the guy before Sexton. And, I mean, we had that brief period, Jose Calderon as well, who moved the ball. So give shout out to Jose. But, no, it's just definitely nice to have a lead guard who is comfortable operating as a facilitator in the head of the offense, and it's just refreshing to see, I guess, after just kind of watching Sexton ignore his teammates for the better part of the year last year, and then especially this season, we're at the point where you can see people getting frustrated on the floor. But in my notes real quick, I just put, if Garland can remain healthy and heading into the summer and Clutch can get him on that LeBron HGH program, that's when he's really going to ascend into that next true level point guard, because he's a shrimp puff, let's just be honest. So We'll see how it's going, but no, Darius Garland's been a lot of fun to watch, and hopefully the next two games in Los Angeles don't kind of kill that momentum, but for now, I'm definitely happy with how he looked against Denver.
Just as a quick contact, a quick kind of stat dump here, to compare Garland, I was looking up a guy that kind of is similar age and whatever, to compare him to Shakeage Alexander, who is a different kind of player. Like, they're not exactly the same guy, and this is doing on the fly. Try to look at Ja's numbers are just, like, much better. I think Shea is great. I think there's a fun alternate reality where the Cavs are pairing Shea and Garland, and this all just sort of looks like it fits a little bit better. But Shea is a rookie, according to Cleveland the Glass, on a 20% usage rate, ahead of the assist percentage of 17.8%. That's in the 11th percentile of all guards in the league. Assist usage ratio 8.9 9, so 0.89, and then a turnover percentage of 14%. All those are sort of not great. Garland, for comparison, has a little bit lower assist usage ratio, a little bit of a higher turnover ratio, a turnover percentage. That is, and especially is kind of the higher thing, but it's on a little higher usage percentage that is pretty close. Like, he's within the Shea numbers, like within the range of that. And considering, like, he didn't play a lot last year, all that stuff, and the progress he's made, I think we could end of the year and we're like, those are not like numbers you feel great about. Those are not numbers that, like, I think are indicative of, you know, of a guy that is figuring everything out exactly. Or like is like great already. Like, Ja is ahead of this, but if you look at those numbers, you just kind of watch him play, like, he pops. But Garland is on his way to being that, and I think he's having a more interesting rookie year than I think a lot of people would argue. Okay, we're gonna take a quick break here, but before we do that, just want to let you know that today's sponsored is brought to you by Echelon Fit. So right now, if you go to echelonfit.com and discover their EX1 connected fitness bikes that offer a high quality at home cycling experience at less than half the price of a Peloton. You know, that one that got memed and turned into Ryan Reynolds ad. Echelon makes beautifully engineered products for everyone. Busy moms, dads, podcasters, first responders, elite athletes, whatever your activity level is. Podcasters, clearly the most athletic ones of the bunch. And with a daily live on-demand studio class right in your home, you never have to set foot in a gym. You'll love Echelon, but if you aren't 100% satisfied with the Echelon, they'll give you your money back. You can join hundreds of thousands of men and women who are getting fit with Echelon. You don't have to pay a ton with Peloton. That's just great copy right there. Buy an Echelon bike today for under $1,000. Go to echelonfit.com/LOMBA to learn about their limited time free Apple iPad and complete details of this exclusive offer. Echelon, it's your time. That's echelonfit.com/LOMBA, echelonfit.com/MBA. We're going to be right back. Okay, Evan, we're back. Again, thanks to Echelon for sponsoring the whole Locked On NBA network at the beginning of 2020. Tell me your thoughts on Colin Sexton from Saturday's game in Denver.
You know, it's, I think at this point we just kind of have to drop the talking point that Colin Sexton doesn't move the basketball because he had one assist. So we're just going to ignore that. But he was Cleveland's leading scorer at 25 points, and he looked great out there at times in some of the offensive sets that John Beilein put them in. And I think the Cavs are starting to realize that they need to stagger him and Garland a bit more at times too, and that helps the offense flow a little bit. But the biggest thing I notice is he was 4 of 7 from the three-point line, and I know that's something that three-point shots abandoned Colin for a little bit. And maybe he changed his shooting mechanics and he started to revert back to what was making it so successful and such a solid option for him offensively last year. And I haven't really, like, taken close notice watching his release compared to, like, last year yet. And that's probably something I'm going to start paying better attention to going forward. But I think Sexton's starting to turn the page a little bit. And I have said for a while, and I think he still is Cleveland's leading scorer, but nights like tonight, well, not tonight, the night against Denver, he was just solid overall offensively, and I'll gladly take it. And, I mean, let's just be fair. He also had the assignment of spending time against either Jamal Murray or Gary Harris, depending on how Denver forced the switch, and both of which are pretty solid guards overall, Jamal Murray more so. And Sexton looked okay out there, and, you know, Gary Harris finished the night on 3 of 11 shooting with 8 points, and while Jamal Murray scored 24 points, it took him 22 attempts to get there, and he connected on 10 of those. So, you know, not – I'll take it, you know. The ball's going to stick with Sexton, but if the shots keep falling and it's not where he shoots Cleveland out of a game, it's not detrimental to the rest of the offensive flow for the Cavs. What about you? What do you think of Sexton?
Yeah, I think that's right. I think there's stuff he does. I think, like, he's not, I think he's like, there's, it's interesting to talk about him, and I'm going to get around to writing about this. Like, I swear to God, but like, who has the time? But I look at Sexton and I look at some of the stuff that he does and I'm like, okay, there's clearly like some positives to this. I get that he would probably be like frustrating to play with. And I do think that if there is going to be like the best version of him, if there's going to be like a version of him that is just like, figured this all out and like has kind of ascended to like the best version of what Colin Sexton could be. You know, I do think that is going to be something where it's like, I do think that's going to be something where he is like getting more, a couple more assists a game, but he doesn't really turn the ball over. He did, at least on Saturday, didn't turn the ball over a ton. He's got good instincts as a scorer. I think, you know, his 3-point shot is clearly like that 1 month blip seems to have been more of just a 1 month blip than it was like a real regression for him, which is a really, really good sign.
Yeah.
And I'll link to this as well in the show notes, but Cavs, Crandall Drischenbach on Dizbach on Twitter, who I'm trying to get on this podcast. Crandall, if you listen to this, come on. But he's got like, he does a lot of good Cavs threads. He does a lot of like LeBron Laker threads as well. But there's stuff he talks about in there that I do also think there is stuff with Sexton that he points out. That's like Colin is improving too much. He does point out like he's trying to do too much in certain spots. He's trying to do too much in certain spots. Also thinks he maybe isn't as decisive as he wants to be, which I kind of think is an interesting kind of read on that. But there is stuff where mm-hmm. if you look through how he's pointing at the game, it's like Sexton does stuff. Is developing like he's like every game there's something I see, and when I look at like the game for him, the assist he got or the an almost assist he got, it's in the first quarter, maybe at like 20 seconds into the game, drives from the wing, Jokic switched on him, and instead of like forcing up a shot, he passes to Garland in the corner, and Garland gets off a three, and it's like kind of like a pretty reasonable outcome for a thing that kind of broke down, and it was the right read for him to make. It didn't work out, but it's pretty clearly on his way to being assist. So I think there's stuff Sexton knows that is good. And when he can score like that, like it's going to provide some value overall otherwise, like on a team that can just be really funky.
Yeah, no, I like it. I'm digging some of the stuff I am seeing from Colin. And it is interesting, like what you said about him. And maybe I need to start paying a bit more attention in that regard as well. Just start finding new things to not let myself get frustrated when Colin Sexton has a bad night or just an all overall frustrating night. But I'm firmly in the camp that he is best suited as going forward this team's Lou Williams, quote unquote, not the sixth man Lou will ever be. But I think him getting comfortable again, like you said, that 3-point dry spell is thankfully, hopefully at this point, knocking on wood, form was an anomaly and you can just watch him keep developing and growing. But no, Colin plays at 100 miles an hour and sometimes he just doesn't, his mind can't keep up with how fast he plays. But I think once we reach the point where the game finally truly slows down for him and he feels comfortable playing at such a frenetic pace with his teammates and just by himself in isolation, like the Cavs, a lot of these negative things and these lumps that we like to knock Sexton for will be just afterthoughts at that point because he'll finally be comfortable with what he's good at. And I think we're starting to see him just show a little bit more of a dynamic repertoire of his offensively. And yeah, I'm down for it. Can't wait to see how he looks against two very good defensive teams in Los Angeles.
Yes, Colin Sexton's going to, and Garland as well, are really going to be facing the gauntlet the next couple of days. Mm-hmm. Okay, here's one other thing. Here's one other take I have that is going to, I think most of the Cavs' best offense does come out of Kevin Love post-up still.
Mm-hmm.
And this game made me think that, because there's stuff that even if they didn't have shots, the stuff where he gets the ball like elbow-ish, maybe a little push more out towards the high post or kind of on the baseline area, I do think there's stuff with him where like that is the defense teams are still like somewhat paying attention to him in that regard. And it's more so like I've noticed that most every team is like switching when they run a pick and roll with Kevin, and it kind of like they kind of are game planning for him to pop. So I wonder if like him operating more in that way is like a more effective way to kind of use him, because it seems like at least the Nuggets, and maybe this is just a one game thing. Maybe this is something that just popped off for me and, you know, it wasn't something I noticed otherwise, but it seems to me like that is something that maybe could lean a little bit more. Cause it does kind of seem to result in positive things. So I want to see if that's a thing going forward.
Yeah, no, I would too. It'll definitely be interesting to see if that's like an offensive wrinkle the Cavs keep going with, because there are times they kind of forget Kevin Love's on the floor, and that's just, you know, the curse that comes with playing with two young, inexperienced point guards who are still kind of learning the game on the fly. Darius Garland, especially, since, let's be frank, I've made this point a few times now, he's pretty much transitioning from high school to the NBA because of the level of competition he played at Vanderbilt. So I am totally for it. And, you know, maybe if Denver loved what they saw, the pun was intended there, Kevin would look pretty good in a Nuggets uniform, in my humble opinion.
A lot of good chances for him to twist mustaches in the Mile High City.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. And I even just thinking ahead, like, if, and now I'm just jumping into hypotheticals, if Kevin Love ends up in Denver as a member of the Nuggets, if he can get Jokic on that hot boy summer diet, gets him some of that. Yeah, there you go. Lots of hummus.
Go to yoga. I would pay if I could attend the yoga class where it's like Kate Bach, Nikola Jokic, and Kevin Love. I would pay lots of money to like be there when Nikola Jokic is like doing yoga and like in LA. Sign me up. Let's go.
Well, the other thing is you got to get him some Dayquil, maybe some allergy medicine too, just to help with the overall redness on his face. But I think that'd be the next step for Jokic's game if he lost a lot of that fat and just kind of put on that lean muscle like Kevin did, and maybe that unlocks it. And I'm just all for Denver not caring too much about defense, because, like, defensively, I mean, Jokic is fine, but if you pair Kevin Love with him, that's not a pretty sight. But you know what? Defense is for nerds, and offense is where it's fun, and maybe Denver needs that last piece to push them over the edge, because Paul Millsap was too afraid to play his playoff demons. I'm calling him out. Exactly.
Channing Frye also called out the Atlanta Hawks this weekend. If you go on Twitter, if you know, to quote Pusha T again, you know. Do you have what would be like a reasonable package for you for just as we wrap up here? Would it be like Millsap, a pick, and like Wancho? Is that what you would be looking for?
Millsap, pick, Wancho, or Malik Beasley feels like the most realistic one.
If you're not Nuggets, getting Michael Porter Jr.
Michael Porter Jr. from all accounts, and contrary to what people want to tell me on Twitter, they're like, yeah, if the Cavs trade him, they have to get Michael Porter to Denver. They have to get Michael Porter. From all accounts, he's not available. We touched on this a while ago. If for some reason Gary Harris is available for Kevin Love, you know, I think I'd drive Kevin to the airport myself at that point. And I'm saying that quietly just in case he's listening, not listening that closely.
Kevin, come on Locked On Cavs.
Yeah, Kevin, come on Locked On Cavs. We can just talk
about Game of Thrones. Like, I still need to know your thoughts on the end of Game of Thrones. So please just come on. Let's talk about it.
I don't want to talk about the end of Game of Thrones. I said good vibes only for 2020.
Okay, Chris. Fine. We'll just talk about like Scorsese movies. Like,
there we go.
We'll just talk. Well, Kevin loves movies. Let's talk about movies. Do you like Parasite? Did he like Knives Out? Like, is he gonna miss? Does Kevin go to Cedar Lee? Like, I don't know. I just want to know.
You know, that's
Cedar Lee Theater. The Cedar Lee Theater sponsor Locked On Cavs. Evan, continue.
I guess just the only thing that would suck is if Kevin gets Jokic into shape. Shout out to one of my favorite Twitter accounts is I Think You Should Leave League Pass, which they just take screenshots from I Think You Should Leave with Tim Robinson, which is like one of the funniest shows on Netflix right now. Watch it. This isn't sponsored. It's just me telling everyone to watch it.
But Netflix, if you want to sponsor the Lock That Network, like David Locke is surely ready to accept that money.
We're wheeling and dealing here tonight on Lock On Cast, folks. But you'd lose that fat piece of shit meme about Jokic, which is like one of my favorite things ever. But no, I think that'll be a lot of fun. But just to jump back to your question, if Gary Harris is available, yeah, you take that offer. But realistically, if you traded Kevin to Denver, you would get Paul Millsap, hopefully a pick, but then either Wancho or Malik Beasley, then who Cleveland will try and sign to an extension because they're both looking to get paid this summer. And then maybe flip Millsap individually for more assets because he fills a void at power forward, but he doesn't make a lot of sense timeline-wise for Cleveland, and I'm sure Kobe Altman's well aware of this considering he's an expiring contract. So just flip him for a few more assets and just let's get real bad and let's go get Anthony Edwards. So yeah, that's my thought process.
Yeah. That's about it. All right, one last break. We'll be back to talk about what to look for the rest of this week. And because the Browns did make a coaching hire on Sunday, please go to Locked On Browns. Check out what Jeff Floyd is doing over there. He's going to have this detailed as a breakdown of the Kevin Stefanski hire as possible and as you'll find on the internet. So please go check out Locked On Browns, and we'll be right back. Okay, Evan, last thing. Well, just a couple more minutes here. Cavs have a tough back-to-back this week. They play the L.A. Lakers on Monday at 10:30. They play the Clippers on Tuesday at 10:30 in L.A. as the start of this week. And then they continue on kind of like they'll come back towards the East Coast over the course of the week before being home that next week. But what are you looking at this week as just some of the things you're looking for in regards to the Cavs? And again, just so people know, we're not going to have like your traditional recaps for those games. I think tentatively we're going to cover both of them in one show later in the week, but mailbag shows to still have Cavs podcasts, but they're not going to be exactly recaps. What are you looking for this week from the Cavs?
Well, I'll just go on the record again saying West Coast Cavs sucks. Because yeah. Cleveland tips off at 10:30 tomorrow, Monday night. I think they play the Lakers first, and then they play the Clippers immediately after on Tuesday. I think this is a good opportunity. Maybe the Cavs can carry a little bit of that momentum off the Denver win, because this is also a golden chance for the Lakers to rest LeBron or Anthony Davis, and for the Clippers to rest either Paul George or Kawhi Leonard. That's what I'm just kind of looking at, but it'll be a tough outing for, like I mentioned before, Sexton and or Garland, because with the Lakers, Alex Caruso, I know people like to meme him a lot on Twitter, but he's by all accounts a very solid defender for the Lakers. And if Danny Green's available, he's also pretty good. And then you flip things over to the Clippers, which is where the real nightmare starts. Pat Beverly is a dog, and I respect him for that, and he will probably make life hell for one of those young point guards. And then Paul George as well, or even Kawhi, you could put the flip one of those two on them as well, and that'll make life difficult. It's going to be tough, and hopefully, like I said, they can build off the momentum, which will be fun. And, you know, hey, it'll be nice to see Ty Lue again and LeBron, but I'm glad Ty Lue's going well. And here's a question for you. Doesn't it feel like a lifetime ago since Ty Lue was head coach of the Cavs? It was literally a year and a couple months ago.
Yeah, it feels like it was like 9 years ago.
Yeah, no, it really does. And God, I love and hate this team sometimes, but last year was just a chore to just watch and cover this team. It almost killed Larry Drew.
It truly sucked.
Yeah, so no, LA should be a lot. It should be an interesting setup. And then towards the end of the week, they, like you said, they're heading closer to home. They're in Memphis and then Chicago. You always look forward to that Garland Morant matchup. Last time Memphis was in Cleveland, Darius was given the task by Bayline to defend Morant one-on-one, and Morant finished with 8 points, 5 rebounds with 11 assists, while Garland had 14 points, 5 rebounds, and 2 assists. And like we talked about, Ja's just on a different stratosphere right now, like by and far the best rookie in this draft class so far, just because by mercy of Zion not playing, but just the fact that he's looked so incredibly comfortable as a lead guard. So I think that'll just be a fun matchup between the two. And, you know, those Grizzlies are wearing those Vancouver throwbacks on Friday, so I'm always there for that. And so that'll just be a fun matchup overall. But what about you? What are you looking forward to or looking at this upcoming week when it comes to the Cavs, West Coast, and road trip gauntlet?
It's pretty simple. I want to see if the Cavs can just like survive the nuclear holocaust that is playing two games in LA back to back.
Oh yeah.
Curious to see what the listing of Kevin Love being out on Tuesday will be.
Oh yeah, I didn't even
him and Tristan just like, I'm good, you know, like me, like hitting some, like I want as much. I also want as much LeBron interacting with his guys as content as possible.
Actually, that's like at the very end of my notes, you know, maybe we can lump that in. Like, we're going to see that Tristan and Kevin are out because they're sick or like their back is acting up. Then you see,
Nice cold. And it's just like the night, but we're going to like go on Twitter and people will be like, yeah, they were like at a wine bar in LA till 4 in the morning with LeBron.
Yeah. And that's all. That's all. can't believe this is my life right now. So.
Yeah. I also just like do what I do truly like want some like I'm just like because I'll probably wake up and watch this game like after work on Tuesdays, my guess. That's kind of like my timeline in these things is watch both these like a day late. I do think the thing I'll be looking forward to seeing is just like LeBron interacting with Lucas. I think that'll be fun. But the game of the week, I think, is very clearly the Memphis game. They play the Bulls the end of the week before they play the Knicks at home next Monday. You know, for me, I think the Memphis game just checks a lot of the boxes. You know, the Cavs played them not too long ago. They won that game by 7. Clarkson had 33. Talita is playing at a really high level. It's in Memphis. As you mentioned, they'll have those jerseys. You know, how the Cavs handle just everything that Memphis does and just a Memphis team that, you know, is in the playoff hunt right now. So, you know, I do just want to kind of see how the Cavs approach that. You know, Jaren Jackson Jr. is coming along as a scorer. Brandon Clark's really good. Again, it's in Memphis. That's just the kind of thing I'm looking forward to seeing. To me, it's probably just the most appealing game of the weekend. I think there's a good chance they go like 1-3 this week, but we'll see. And again, we're probably not seeing the Clippers with like at full strength. So like if you're saying the Cavs are going to have a chance to pull off an upset, like maybe Kawhi sits and it's just like a weird Lou Williams, Montrezl Harrell, like pick and roll night. And there's no PG, no Kawhi. So, but we'll see. But that to me is that it's, and if I was going to rank the games in terms of the order of how much I'm looking forward to watching them, it's very clearly to me, Grizzlies, Lakers, Clippers because of the quality of those two teams, and then the Bulls being last. But the Bulls game also could be fun. But I just thinking it's the second half of a back to back, end of a road trip. I don't have high expectations that the Cavs are going to like look like a real basketball team on Saturday.
I'd agree with that. Like that Chicago game could go either way for Cleveland. Either they go in there because Chicago, is, you know, hard to believe, but more dysfunctional than the Cavs are at times. And, like, the players may not like playing for Bayline in Cleveland, but at least they don't have to play for an asshole like Boylan. So, you know, just little things like that. But Chicago's just such a weird team this year because I fell for the trap, too, where I thought, yeah, maybe they could push for the playoffs, but I don't have their record in front of me. But, no, that's a winnable game for Cleveland for sure. But, like you said, it's the end of the road trip. Probably, you know, hopefully focusing on the game, but you know, the back of their mind, they're just ready to go home and play the Knicks that following Monday. But it's an interesting week. I could, like you said, I could see 1-3 being a realistic record for this leg of the road trip, or even 2-2 if like they somehow win back to back against Memphis and Chicago. But I think the Lakers and Clippers games are both unwinnable, and you know, maybe it's that Nuggets Magic where we thought that game was unwinnable, but you know, both Los Angeles squads are in a different level than Denver, who's a great regular season team. So
yeah,
we'll see how it happens.
Any final thoughts as we get out of here?
Trying to think. You know, I think Stefanski was a good hire for the Browns. If you want me to be 100 with you,
yeah, I'm in on it. I think it's good.
Yeah, no, I mean, Podesta got his guy. I think some of the rules I'm reading now that the Browns are doing is a little goofy, but it's the Browns. But this is a Cavaliers podcast. I'm interested to see just kind of how this squad is kind of looking going forward. Oh, just a fun note real quick. In the Nuggets game, Dele only played 6 minutes and Brandon Knight played 18. And I think it was either Kelsey Russo or Joe Vardon, the Athletic, noted that or it could have been Chris Fedor as well. You know, I kind of lump Chris in with them as well. They noted that Brandon Knight is starting to earn more minutes and Bayline's trust in the rotation. And you and I talked about this before, but when Dante Exum is fully healthy again, maybe this is the last we're going to start seeing of Matthew Dellavedova playing for the Cavs. So that'll be something interesting to watch too.
Yeah, I think that 100% is. I think Brandon Knight is clearly offering some kind of juice, and we'll see if that continues to be a thing or if it boosts his trade value or whatever. But I think a very astute point on their part. Okay, that's going to be it for myself, for Evan. This has been Locked On Cavs for Monday, January 13th. Get your last-second mailbag questions in, lockedoncavs@gmail.com. I think the next couple, we have one guest book that I'm very excited about. Then we're going to be doing some mailbag stuff, so please get those in. To lockdowncavs@gmail.com. Submit those. We'll have, again, shows all this week, a little different than a normal week because of Evan and I are members, have jobs, and then also just can't stay up until 2 a.m. to do this stuff. But we're going to still give you shows, and then we'll have talking about those two LA games later this week. But for myself, for Evan, it's been Locked on Cavs. Have a good Monday.